Welcome to Rubber Band Live, the Australian recruitment and talent acquisition vodcast and podcast. I am Eden Haddock, your host and the creator of Rubber Band, the recruitment network for all. Let's go live. And we are live. Welcome, listeners, to today's episode of Rubber Band Live, which is Recruitment Chinwag with Naomi Pake. Now, before we begin, I would like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land that I live and work on, the Wadawurrung and Dja Dja Wurrung people. I recognise their continuing connection to the land and waterways. I pay my respects to their elders past, present and emerging, and I would like to extend this to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. Now, joining me all the way from sunny Western Australia, I have Naomi Pake joining me for a chinwag. How are you doing, Naomi?
I'm terrific. Thank you so much for having me on.
Terrific. That's a good word. I mean, we're in the middle of a heat wave here in Victoria, but it's always hot where you are. Like, where are you in Western Australia?
I'm in Perth, the capital city, but yes, I heard about the horrible hot weekend you guys had. We had to endure that a few weeks ago. We had a couple of weeks where we had 42, 43 degree days, and it was not fun.
Oh, it hasn't been quite that bad. It's kind of early to mid-30s here, but we're just not equipped for it in Victoria, you know. We don't have – I'm in Western Victoria. So we don't even have a beach, right? At least you can go to the beach, and the beaches are beautiful.
Oh, very true, very true. We are spoiled here.
Yeah, no, it's beautiful. I love Perth. I've only been to Perth a couple of times and it's been for work. And I've always said, oh, gosh, I wish I could stay longer. Like, it's such a beautiful place. Have you always been in Perth? Is that your hometown?
No. So I suppose that can lead into things if you want. I came over to Perth when I was 8 years old, so I have been here a long time. Look, if I'm being honest, maybe one of my regrets is not having moved to Melbourne. I actually love Melbourne. My sister lives there.
Great.
I've got friends that live there. I just love the arts and cultural scene there. But look, we are very lucky in Perth. I think firstly with the weather, we're quite lucky. Even in winter, we still have sunny days. It's very safe, very clean. But I grew up the early years of my childhood. I grew up largely overseas in a lot of different countries.
Wow.
Yeah, so
Oh, tell me about that. Where were you before you came to Australia?
So I don't remember it because I was only there for a short time, but I was born in Hong Kong and then we headed over to, can't remember the specific order, but the UK, Korea, the United Kingdom, a little time in the USA. And then spent a couple of years in Brunei. So, yeah, I went to a lovely international school in Brunei and I have some very vivid and fond memories there. It was quite a unique spread of society, the international school, because you had very wealthy expat children and children that were locals who lived on the huts by the river. So,
wow.
Really culturally enriching.
Yeah, right. And do you remember much of that, of your childhood overseas and all the travel?
Not before Brunei, but I have a lot of really awesome memories from Brunei. And we also lived quite close to the Sultan's Palace. And we also used to go there for school to do horse riding as well. So I was very lucky. I had a very blessed childhood. Very, very blessed.
Amazing. Amazing. And what brought you to Perth?
My parents decided that they could either go back to Korea or the USA because my dad was a civil engineer, but they wanted us to have a better life, a chance to succeed in our careers. And for people who know anything about the Asian societies, especially in Korea, it's highly competitive. It's such a high volume of people in a small space and it's very high pressure, so it can be quite tough for children growing up in that setting and they wanted something a bit different for us.
Fantastic. Well, so settled in Perth and you did your primary school and high school in Perth?
Yes, I did. That was interesting as well. Primary school, I just have really random memories. Like school I went to, we had to do everything in calligraphy pen, like the traditional calligraphy pens where you put the ink in, even our mats. I remember coming home from school every day with black ink all over me. High school wasn't so much fun. I went to an all-girl school, and I'll just say girls can be quite mean. And I was a
Speaking of boys, oh,
yeah.
teenagers, full.
I was a bit of a nerd, and it didn't make me very popular in high school.
Okay, I gotcha, I gotcha. I wasn't a nerd, I was an arty kid, and that didn't make me very popular in high school, so I can relate. Oh, my friends were nerds, though. I hung out with all the nerds. I just wasn't, I didn't apply myself, nor was I interested in my schoolwork enough to be a nerd, but I was just the out there art kid. But I love it. I mean, I have fond memories of high school regardless. Like, do you look back fondly, even though the girls were mean?
No. Look, if I'm being honest, I had a good set of close friends in high school who protected me and looked after me. So I'm grateful for that.
Yeah, that's what it's about. It's those friendships, right? Now, did you have a casual job when you were in high school, or did
I
you?
did. I
What was it? What was
so
your first
I
job?
had my first job. I had two jobs. And I think I was, I think, can you start working at 15? I know I was quite young,
Yeah,
but I think I was either
14 and 9
10 or
months.
11. So my very first job was at Supervalue, which is now IGA, at the end of the checkout packing bags. And then I graduated when I was old enough to work on the checkout. And I remember you talking with someone else on a recent podcast about how times have changed in technology. Because we actually, those pick and weigh nuts and fruit, even just veggies and things, we had a big folder with all the codes, and they were 8-digit codes, and we had to type them in for everything.
Yeah, the cash registers were all coded. I mean, when I started at Fossey's, we had just bought in, and FPOS was quite new at the time as well. And you could scan some things, but a lot of things was code were coded as well. But I remember my friends working in the supermarkets, remembering and fruit shops and things like that, and having to remember all the
Had
different
to
codes of all
remember.
the different products. Yeah, it's amazing, really. And now it's self-serve, right? Like back in the day, it was like everyone went through the checkout. So did you enjoy
I
your time in
know.
the supermarket?
I did. It was a lot of fun. And it was a real, because it was a family-owned business as well, they really looked after us. Even after we finished shifts, sometimes they'd bring in food and we all sit around and have dinner. Sometimes I'd get a lift home with the store manager. So they really looked after us. It was really nice.
Fantastic. Now, so if I reflect on my time, so I started doing casual work and then I just continued doing that and I deferred university and, never went, didn't actually care about studies until I was much older. But what about yourself? Did you study at university or did you go into the workforce after high school?
I studied at university, and I had my parents very much wanted me to be doctor, lawyer, or an engineer, or a dentist. I didn't get high enough in the TE to get into medicine, so I did occupational therapy.
Oh, nice.
Realized the hard way that I couldn't handle sick people and cadavers, so I dropped out and then spent the next few years doing a lot of different things at uni. I did a semester in law, a semester in e-commerce, psychology. Then I went back to occupational therapy. Then my parents said, please just pick a degree. We don't care, just pick one. So I ended up doing political science and Asian studies, thinking I was going to become a politician. And then realized
Oh,
halfway
political
through,
studies
no.
and Asian studies, did you say? Oh, wow. And you thought you were going to be a politician.
I thought I was going to be a politician or work for the United Nations.
Wow. And I think you'd be a brilliant politician. I'd vote for you, Naomi. It's never too late.
You never know. Yeah. But, and then I graduated feeling very lost and overwhelmed. And at the time I was working at Meijer in the city, and I was working at the Becker makeup counter, and my dad, bless him, back in the day when people used to advertise quite heavily in the newspaper for jobs, caught up with him for lunch one day, and he'd cut out a clipping for a job in the newspaper. And this is probably moving into your next question, what got me into recruitment, or why I decided recruitment. My dad said that I'll forever be grateful for him for saying this to me. He said, look, I'm sorry I put so much pressure on you, and I just want you to be happy in life and whatever you do. And I saw this job, and I know that you like writing. I know you love research. You like talking to people. I think this sounds really good. And it was for what they called a research consultant with an executive search company in the oil and gas sector. And it literally was researching the market, doing a lot of cold calling, networking, helping them build market maps. So, and not many jobs like that exist anymore, at least not so much in Australia unless you're in that executive search space.
That is so interesting. Do you know what? This is a first. Normally, you know, when I talk to other recruiters and talent professionals, we're still on the journey of trying to explain what we do to our parents. But your dad found the ad and thought, I think you'd be really great at this, Naomi. This is a first. This is an absolute first. And you probably never have to explain to your father what you do.
Absolutely. So it was really, really interesting, and I learned so much. But it was back in the days, I think LinkedIn was only just taking off, because it was sort of 15, 16 years ago, and it was 99% cold calling, and it was, you know, being covert, speaking to reception, trying to build out the org chart, or getting someone who worked there to give me a copy of their phone directory and holding on to it like it was this little treasure map. And even I'm still a bit torn. We were quite brave in what we did with our techniques. We used to call and literally say, "Oh, I went to the such and such conference. I've lost so and so's business card. He had red hair. He's your engineering manager." And then they'd literally just give you the name and the number.
I can remember it. It was the same when I started. I started around the same time as you, but like, and I'd be a little bit, you know, I mean, it's lying really, but let's say cheeky, but you would ring up and you would say, "Oh, look, I'm interested in inviting your chief operating officer to an event that we're hosting. I'm from Melbourne Events Company. I was wondering if you'd be able to pass on their details so I could email them." Terrible when you think about it. Like, how cheeky were we?
Oh, we were very cheeky.
I love it. Well, I'm curious to know, Naomi, when you met with the exec search firm, your dad had handed you the newspaper job, you went to meet with them, you know, you applied for the position. What was it about the industry that made you go, "Do you know what? I've been searching. I've been looking at the United Nations. I've been considering becoming a politician. I'm working at Mecca in Maya, but something about what they're talking to me about in this role is resonating with me." What was it? What excited you about recruitment?
Two things. I think firstly, the gentleman who interviewed me, who was over from Scotland, because they had international offices in Scotland and the UK, USA, he just had so much energy and passion for what he did. He spoke about possible future career pathways. He spoke about opportunities to go work overseas in their international offices. And at that time, oil and gas was well and truly booming, so he spoke about that. And I knew nothing about the oil and gas industry, and it just sounded really, really exciting to me. And he spoke about all the events I'd get to go to, but really talked about how the role, even though it wasn't a consultant or a BD person, he actually said to me, "This is possibly one of the most important roles in the organisation," and just made it sound really exciting and sold the opportunity to learn. And he just won me over at the interview.
Okay. And then when you got on the tools, so you started the job, you got the job. So we're going back a bit, but congratulations. tell me, did the reality of that, like, did it meet your expectations? Were there any surprises of what the recruitment industry was like? Tell me about that. You know, fresh face, straight into the industry. What did you think?
It was a bit of a shock, if I'm being honest. I didn't realise how challenging it was going to be. To not only find people, but to convince them to want to talk to you, but also to learn about the industry relatively quickly, not being a technical person and knowing nothing about oil and gas and engineering, to actually be able to sound like you know what you're talking about without misrepresenting yourself and what you actually know. I found it fascinating learning about what motivates people and just basic things like figuring out what the best time of day to call people was and saying, instead of launching into the discussion, saying, is now a convenient time to speak? Can I call you back later? So it was an eye-opener, but it was also just so fascinating for me seeing where oil and gas comes from.
Yeah, totally. And have you now, you've remained as in agency recruitment in your career, or have you had any stints internal? Tell me about that.
So I did have another stint with another executive search firm, and a number of reasons led me to decide I wanted to go in-house because I personally don't enjoy the agency environment. So I'd spoken to a couple of people, including some of our current clients, and they actually said, look, we actually think you'd be a great fit for an internal environment. So I started exploring. I also, after I'd been in internal recruitment for a while, did go back into a somewhat agency type role, which was very unique. It was a global quality testing and assurance company that had an in-house labour hire agency, but we also had in-house recruiting. So that was mainly in oil and gas as well, but it was really good because we still didn't have aggressive targets. So it was like working in an in-house environment. Our contracts were already set in stone with key global operators and we were guaranteed to make placements. It was just a matter of finding the people.
And working in, I hope you don't mind me asking, but working in, you know, oil and gas and engineering that, you know, particularly in the past has been a male-dominated industry, I suppose. Have you, in terms of specialising in that field, like has that come with its challenges?
Yes, it has. And I have, by choice, worked in other fields as well. And it is notable that it is definitely very male dominated. Look, there's companies doing a lot of amazing things in that space, especially reaching out to people in high school, because I think that's where it needs to start. Because once they've left high school, once they've graduated uni, it's too late. So I think it's wonderful to see so many companies doing vacation work, holiday programs during the school holidays, offering scholarships. And I think there needs to be more of that, because one of the challenges for us, and I think the IT sector is facing this as well, the women get very discouraged even when they're studying the engineering and science, mathematics degrees, because they're realising how male-dominated it is.
Totally. And
so they find it, if they find it hard, they start to doubt themselves as well.
That's really interesting. And I agree, because I think we focus a lot of our energy on university grads, but I think by the time you're graduating from university, you already know the industry you want to move into. And it could be factors like what you've described in terms of, you know, oil and gas and, you know, technology, for example. I think when you're a teenager and in high school, just like you and I, we didn't really know what we wanted to do. So that's the time where your mind is quite curious and you're open to ideas. And if we can take teenagers on that journey and provide pathways that are non-traditional and not necessarily through a tertiary education, I think it's really critical, and it's how we can drive change in organisations and bring in diverse minds and diverse people. And And we're seeing organisations doing it, right? Like, it is happening, but I think we need to do more of it because we don't put the same energy into that as we do into university graduate programs. I'm not sure if you agree, but that's my thoughts anyway.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. I do. And I have had people say to me when I've spoken about this in previous roles, oh, but it's too soon and people change and they haven't fully developed as a person. Yes, that's true, but I think if you put the industry and the types of jobs in front of them and actually be upfront with them and say, yes, it is male dominated, it will be hard, but this is your chance to make change, be part of something new, and this is what your future could look like, and this is what an engineer actually does. It's not just X, Y, Z.
Yeah, and you can argue we're never fully formed human beings, are we? We're always learning and we're always changing our minds, so there we go. Oh, gosh. Tell me, what have been the biggest lessons that you've learned over your career?
Oh, so many. And I'm still learning. I am still learning and I hope to continue to learn. I think the day I stop learning is the day I'll go, I need a career change or think of something different for my life. But biggest lessons learned, and this was, I'm going to give a shout out to one of my recent former managers who was fantastic to work with. And I walked into a job first time as a team leader, hadn't done it before, in aged care, very challenging industry to recruit for. And there'd been quite a bit of turnover in the recruitment team as well. And after I joined them, there was still quite a bit of turnover and the recruitment team didn't have a very good reputation internally, not through their own fault, but it just wasn't respected or understood as a function. So yeah. I walked in, and look, he was honest with me in the interview, but obviously didn't want to scare me away. And I got in, and I remember sitting down with him in my at the end of my first week and saying, I think I've made a mistake. I can't do this. And he actually said to me, you need to believe in yourself. You need to stop doubting yourself. And after about a month, I had the same discussion with him. I said, I feel like I'm failing. I'm not doing a good job. I don't know if I'm right for the job. And he said, you need to put your pride aside and focus on the job. Because I think as human beings, and especially in recruitment, we might feel sometimes embarrassed if we haven't delivered what we said we would. And we don't need to realize there's so many factors outside of our control. We see ourselves as problem fixers, and we are quite often very ambitious and driven and go, yes, I'm going to fix this, I'm going to do this, I'm going to deliver this, and the reality isn't actually what happens inside your head.
It's true. It's true. And this is what leads to burnout in our industry, because we're results-driven people. I think we want outcomes. We work incredibly hard. We wouldn't be in this industry if we didn't work incredibly hard. And when we can't get that deliverable, that outcome, that result, it's crushing, because we're, and it's so hard. And I think that is really wonderful advice that leader gave you, because we need to be kinder to ourselves, because it's not always, it's out of our control. It is. Like, no matter, you could do everything in your power. You could work 24 hours a day, but at the end of the day, we're dealing with human beings, and human beings change their mind, or human beings make a different decision to the decision that we would make if we're in their shoes, and that's cool, right? We just can't always get what we're after, and sometimes we're running up a mountain and we quite often don't have anyone to guide us up that mountain, and it can be really tough and I think really lonely at times too.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's a tough gig. So anyone out there, make sure that you're being kind to yourself and looking after yourself, because it's a challenge. And I think we've all had those moments where we've really struggled. I know I have, where it's just all gotten too much. It's a tough gig.
Well, it is. And following on from talking about burnout in the same role, I learned a lot of valuable lessons in that role. I said to him one day, I put together a bit of a business case, and I said, we need a new recruit applicant tracking system. This one is not fit for purpose. Finally managed to get creative with where we were going to get the budget from and got the permission to go ahead. I was very excited, and I rushed. I got excited and I rushed, and he had said to me repeatedly, have you done your project plan? have you done your Gantt chart? Have you done this? And I'm like, yeah, it's all under control. Like, I went and developed processes, worked out what the interface would look like, just did all the everything else but. And then I also said to him, because he said to me, are you going to be able to do this whilst you're still doing your job? And I said, yeah, yeah, be fine. It wasn't fine. It got to the point where I was in the office working some nights to like 8, 9 o'clock, sometimes even 10 o'clock, thinking, oh, my God, I've committed to this deadline. What's going on? And he had to sit me down, and I won't say exactly what he said because there were some swear words in there, but he basically said, you should have listened, though, nicely. He was being nice. He said, you should have listened to me. And what have you learned? So after that, we went and spoke to IT, got one of the project managers to help me develop a Gantt chart, got IT involved, and I got seconded into IT for 3 months. And we seconded someone else into my role as a step-up opportunity.
Fantastic. So
don't take on too much and don't be too proud to say, I need help. I made the wrong decision.
I know. Look, I've learned that lesson as well. I can't tell you how many times I've been in that position where I've gone off really, I've really bitten off more than I can chew, right? And you need to realize, again, be kind to ourselves. I love that. That's a wonderful story, Naomi. And what a kind leader as well to provide you that support. And that would have been a great secondment too into IT. Did you enjoy that?
Oh, I loved it. I learnt so much, and it actually gave me a lot more respect for IT because especially when you work in large organisations, I think IT doesn't get the respect it deserves, and there's always, oh, it's IT's fault, or, oh, IT hasn't responded to the ticket yet, they're useless, or, you know. And when you actually see what they're doing and how busy they are, it was really, really interesting.
Oh, amazing. Well, what are you most passionate about, Naomi? It can be life, work, anything at all.
All right. At work, and people who've worked with me and know me well will laugh because I bang on about recruitment marketing and employer branding a lot, even though I don't have any training or background in it. I just think it's something that's too often dismissed in a lot of companies. Mm. As being something fluffy and a nice to have if we have time, if we have budget. And I think it's just so important because it drives down to the fundamentals of recruitment and talent acquisition in so many ways, especially with knowing your demographic, recognizing that one message doesn't apply to all people, and having a strategy about, you know, honestly representing who you are as a company, why people should apply and work for you, why people who work for you want to work for you, and why people leave, come back. It really helps paint a really compelling story and reason for people to apply. And it leads into so many other interesting things that can inform better recruitment and talent acquisition strategies. And I'm still at a loss to understand why it's dismissed as something fluffy.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think it's critical. I mean, we need to be able to find people that connect to our purpose, connect to our values, and the way to do that is to share employee stories and to really show an authentic voice. Like, it's providing that authentic voice to the organisations we work for and to bring that forward. And I think the reason some organisations, you know, may describe it as fluffy because it kind of sits in between talent and marketing. It's hard to actually say, is this a marketing, is this a talent? And I think it just becomes a little bit confusing. And I think a lot of organisations, maybe they don't make the connection between a customer value proposition and an employee value proposition, whereas you've got other organisations like Bunnings that use the employee value proposition as their customer value proposition, right? Like, it's interesting. I think we've come a long way with it. I can remember fighting to try and get content created, you know, 7 years ago. I think now, you know, organisations I work for see it as critical. I mean, I have we have our own stream of employer brand. I have a peer that's ahead of, that sits alongside me. But, yeah, I agree. I'm really passionate about it too. And I want to see more organisations being bolder with it. Like I'm kind of hanging out for something that's going to knock my socks off. So I'm hoping that's coming soon because I'm seeing good work. But I want something that is game-changing. So anyway, we might do it at REA. Who knows? We'll see. We've got a very talented head of employer brand. shout out there to Lee if you're listening. Now, finally, what advice would you give to anyone who is working in recruitment or considering a career in recruitment?
I would say in anyone who is firstly people who are in recruitment, hang in there. It's very rewarding. It's very rewarding, but it can be incredibly tough at times. We're often the first people that the organisation points fingers at when something goes wrong. I think practice acceptance and letting things go. And if any of my friends listen to this, they're going to laugh at me because I don't practice what I preach. But I'm saying that because I don't do it myself often enough, I think it's one of the most important things for anyone in recruitment. You want to do things, you want to bring changes into effect, you want different decisions to be made, and sometimes you don't get the outcome you wanted. So it's really important to just let it go and move on. And also recognize that it's not about you. There's other factors Absolutely. At play.
Amazing advice. Well, Naomi, thank you so much for joining
me. Do you want me to talk about?
Oh, you can talk about anything you like. Get going.
I was going to answer for people going into recruitment.
Oh, yes, let's do it. Let's keep going. Bring it on.
I'll make it quick. I was just going to say, I think we need more people to come into recruitment. I think agencies are struggling in particular. I think it's a quite unique career in that it's one of the few areas where you can make a decent living without having formal qualifications. And it's also a career that can open a lot of doors. So you can start off in recruitment and go into HR, social media, marketing. You can go in IT and work for a recruitment software provider. You can go into public relations, marketing. I think it's a real door opener.
Absolutely. And hopefully some more university graduates will have their father cut out. Well, they're not cutting it out of the newspaper now, but shooting over a job advertisement that they find on a job board, and we can have more Naomis in this world. Naomi, it's been an absolute pleasure having a chinwag. A long time coming. We've been wanting to do this for a while, so I'm so glad we did. It was amazing. Thank you so much.
No, thank you.
Have a great afternoon. Thanks, Naomi.
You too.